you know, when you meet the real, the actual people, I mean, just look at the beady eyes and mean mouths sort of sneering, and I mean, I know this is what they think, people like me think, so I hate thinking it, but I just find myself thinking they're from a different fucking species, you know, with their T-shirts and weird trousers and tailbirds, and why do they wear clothes with writing on? And why are they so fucking fat?
I know, and stupid.
God, I hate this place.
Hello, friends. It's your Chapo this week. Joining us, let's just get to it. Joining us now in the trap, Tim Heidecker. Tim, what's up?
Hey, thanks for having me.
Our pleasure.
Happy to be here.
Tim Heidecker in the trap at last. I guess a good place to start would be back over the summer. We met you briefly in Philadelphia, hanging out with Vic Berger, and we were at this bar with you for like a minute. But while we were there, us and a few lucky patrons got to see you, our own Matt Christman, and Rob Wiseman do a three-way Alex Jones off.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. That was definitely a Chapo highlight for me.
I assume I won.
Well, of course.
Everybody wins when we're talking Alex Jones. Have you had any favorite Alex Jones moments recently or just in general?
I haven't been watching because I've been hearing reports that it's like he's tamped things down quite a bit. Like he's turned his own – he's now like trying to present himself a little more reasonably. But then I heard about the Joe Rogan appearance where he apparently was wasted and high. So I have a little bit of catching up to do.
Yeah, I mean, for the most part, you're right. He is kind of boring now. He just sort of turned into a Republican pundit. Like, it sort of sucks when you go from, like, saying everyone in the White House is a child-molesting lizard to being like, well, guys, Blue Lives Matter. We need to do something about the death tax. But when he went on Rogan, he was extremely fucked up. And Rogan, of course, as he is, like, contractually obligated, asks him, Alex, do you take DMT, man?
Right.
And he goes, I don't need to, brother. And I was like, I agree.
Well, let's just say we're not in Kansas anymore.
Alex, have you ever done DMT?
No.
Do you want to?
I don't need to. I go to every night. I go to sleep.
I like that video of him. There was a video of him, I guess it was right around New Year's or something, where he was out with his shirt off in the like 40 degree or like, you know, freezing temperatures. Did you see that where he was like,
this is what it's like to be a man. You don't need, my body hurts right now. It's cold. Cold air is breathing on. But this is about, this is what it's like to be masculine and feeling like a human being. This is what a human being, we don't need coats. We don't need shirts. And he was like, you know,
he was all amped up on, you know, like Christmas cider.
Do not wear fluoridated shirts. Do not wear any shirts that have fluoride in them.
George Soros wants you to wear, you know, Eddie Bauer shorts and Eddie Bauer flannels and everything. And then all that is just mind control of the fibers. The cotton fibers are genetically modified to connect with your cell structure and, you know, have you vote for Hillary Clinton.
He clearly is missing his old crazy days because he busted out that thing the other day about how Lady Gaga was going to do a mass satanic ritual at the halftime show.
That feels like lazy writing, right?
I disagree. I disagree. I think he's right because if you guys noticed, numerous pizza companies advertised during the Super Bowl.
The ritual succeeded, right? The Patriots won.
Back over the summer, he had a great moment on Twitter where he added Barack and Michelle Obama, and the photo is just him on the 4th of July with just a massive plate of red meat. And he was like, you can't stop me. This is freedom right here.
I love not being able to shit for a week because I stuck it to the Democrats.
No, wait, the best one recently that I loved maybe more than anything was the whole Roger Stone was poisoned story that was going on.
What? And I didn't hear that.
You didn't hear that?
Yeah, I missed that.
That's worth looking back on. He claims he was poisoned. But in the same sentence, he talks about how he's taken Alex Jones pills. Like he's taking these vitality pills or something. So he's like, going, yeah, I think somebody got to me, you know, so the Illuminati or whatever, they've got to me. And I've never felt like this. I'm usually a healthy guy. I've just been sick and feeling really bad, you know, and it doesn't make sense because I'm taking the Alex Jones pills. So obviously these pills are making you sick.
Someone tampered with the vitality potion. This is like when someone put poison in aspirin or something, and it causes, you know, like you take the vitality pills and then it causes the before and after shot to look exactly the same.
It reminds me of Mike Cernovich, who developed some like rare skin disorder because he kept putting on some medicated lotion and would not stop doing it. And then one day his doctor says, oh, you have a condition that's like a repeated application condition. Like, it's like, frankly, it sounds like a made-up condition that they that's a euphemism for, oh, the patient's an idiot and did a stupid thing.
The Mike Cernovich blue pills that he was pushing, which were is ironic already right there.
Like, have these, what the hell, man?
I don't know. I don't know if he doesn't realize it or he's being very clever, but he was. Did you see those where he was saying like how he's mixing these? What are they called? These
gorilla
pills
mind.
That are supposed
the nootropics.
To give you. What's it called?
Nootropics.
Yeah, the nootropics. He's like, I got my new blend, and he did that classic, like snake oil salesman thing where he's like, these are too intense for you. I do not recommend trying these. You know, so like some of his dopier followers are be like, well, I can handle it. What are you talking about? Bring them on.
You actually,
well, as Amber said, he is really like. I mean, his whole thing is basically like a granola Marin County wine mom, only like made masculine,
right?
You know, like it's all organic and natural supplements. But like in a masculine aggro way.
Are you too much of a fucking pussy to align your chakras? Most people can't handle unleashing their chi.
Cernovich's 14 words is just that spiel that's on the top of every Dr. Bonner soap. But yeah, no, that was a treat seeing you do Alex Jones in Philadelphia, if only for a moment. But yeah, since then things have gotten even weirder in this country. But I guess I just wanted to like talk to you about how, I don't know, like, you know, being a fan of your work and stuff, like, I guess you've never really been like a political comedian. Like, thinking back to Awesome Show, a lot of it was right. Based on this kind of grotesque and kind of absurd channeling of American culture in certain ways. And I feel like now as a comedian, like, how do you work when that absurdity and that grotesquery has like there's no subtext anymore, it's just become the
yeah.
thing.
Well, yeah, I mean, Eric and I never were very consciously not, you know, we weren't political, but that's not exactly true. I mean, I think a lot of our work was reflective of the culture we were living in and the consumer, you know, disgusting advertising and television and stuff. But we were very conscious to stay away, I guess, from current events and topical, you know, humor, because we just felt it wasn't something we were good at, and it wasn't something we were. There was other people that were doing it better, and so I mean, the only real political work I do now, I mean, the only political humor, whatever, is just through when I, you know, communicate on Twitter and, you know, on cinema and. Decker gets a little political, you know, but yeah, it just felt for years that it was just best to not, first of all, it immediately ages your work, you know, like it's not fun to watch a Daily Show from 2010 or a Daily Show from last night for that matter. But that's another conversation.
Why don't you guys speak for your fucking selves? Because I rewatch the Daily Shows about the confirmation process of Harriet Myers every day. It's my favorite thing to watch.
But I just felt like there was a good character that I was interested in exploring, who was this Tea Party guy, right wing guy. And so that's how I kind of started doing more political stuff. And it's a fun persona to take on because you can be obnoxious and arrogant and hypocritical and all these fun character traits that make for good comedy.
But just in terms of like thinking back to like just the weirdness of Awesome Show, like is it this kind of uncanny feeling? Like, do you feel at all that just reality has caught up to the to what you were doing on that show? Because, I mean, that's kind of how I feel watching TV or just, like, living now in 2017.
Yeah, it's we're in a post-humor scenario. I think there's not much more you can add to it. I mean, I think, like, Vic Berger does a great job of recontextualizing the news just a little bit to make it sort of like dig down into the deep horror of the reality, adding just a little, like not changing much, you know. That's the key. You don't need to change that
well, yeah,
much.
Like when we talked to Vic a while ago, it's just that idea of just tweaking what's already there and intensifying it or skewing it by just like 5% or just zooming in on those weird throwaway moments is really what makes it, his shit so funny.
Yeah, and on cinema, my character last season endorsed Donald Trump, and in the way I did it was this long, poorly written, rambling, you know, just stupid endorsement that, you know, wasn't that far away from the way a lot of people were really treating it.
Do you feel slightly guilty now that your satirical character didn't endorse Hillary Clinton and that we now have Donald Trump as president?
Because if I would have endorsed her,
I think so, Tim. I think so.
Well, no, I don't have any guilt receptors in my brain about anything.
I don't know. Me and I feel like I feel the opposite of that. Frankly, I feel like when me and Felix would work in a satirical vein, we just sort of we didn't make jokes. This is just exactly how we viewed reality. That it's governed by distressed dads mad about family court and. People from the Midwest, and yeah, we were right.
We were right, and we fucked up by not following our gut. If you look at us, we did great when we realized that politics are determined by personal hatred, racial pathologies, sexual pathologies,
a lot of
family
sexual
court,
pathology.
Family court, and
which is kind of the marriage of all three of those.
Yes, and we fucked up when we were like, yeah, let's look at the data.
No data,
none.
Well, it is like, I mean, I guess you guys probably agree that, but. Donald Trump is such a cartoon, such a ridiculous character. You can't, which is what's so mind bending about what's happening now is we're just shocked and like, I can't believe that this, like the Hamburglar is the president.
I realize though, that the Adult Swim character that really was the harbinger for Trump more than any other one. It was Master Shake.
Yeah, I can see that.
Like, Trump basically is Master Shake in every way.
Right.
What the hell's this? I told you, fireman, astronaut, race car driver, maybe bikini judge. And this is what I get? Food service? Are you kidding me? This is third world, and I'm from the first. I'm number one, baby.
I'm amazed that they even hired you.
No one else will do it. They're taking that chance. And then, if something goes down, which it will, I will sue the corporate office. Oh, me so sorry. Maybe you're in the wrong business. And maybe immigration would like to know about this. Unbelievable.
Unfathomable.
You know, they sneak in, and then they try to rule us.
Yeah, I never thought about that. Maybe a combination of him and Carl, the next door neighbor.
Right. He's got, like, the body of Carl and then the brain of Master Shake.
Yes. And Meatwad is Eric and Don Jr.
Right.
Poor Bernie. Frylock would have won. That's all I have.
Would you want to, like, swap brains for a day with, like, say, the women who were on – there was those women that were on CNN the other day that were – like still all the way on the side of like fully still behind Donald Trump. Would you want to see the world like that for like a day?
Hell yeah. Hell yeah, dude.
Wait,
I would
imagine.
I feel like that's the only way I could get my head around it is if I actually just had some sort of Freaky Friday.
First thing I would do is take off my shirt and touch my own boobs. And
I would fucking love to experience life through a perfectly smooth brain. Like, it would be, imagine having this guy who's just our dumbest, fattest, oldest president, an old man with holes in his brain who puts on his pajamas the moment it gets kind of dark outside and just fucking bumbles around like
he's bouncing around in the White House with no lights on, like Scrooge with a candle on a little
yeah, he's
little holder.
He's sitting in a race car bed inside a bouncy castle, watching like Paula Zahn and being like, oh, I tried to fuck her by buying furniture with her once. She's never been fair to me. And looking at that guy and thinking like either like this guy's gonna bring the white race back, or thinking this guy is everyone's gonna respect us now. That would be awesome.
Tim, what did the ladies on CNN say though?
What?
What did the ladies on CNN who are still a fan of him?
Oh, I just caught a clip of it, but they had interviewed people that were, you know, they're just like, do you approve of his job so far? And they're like, absolutely, he's doing an amazing job, and he's the greatest. And you know, they were just like still fully in the tank, fully.
That thing where he watches a mediocre sketch comedy show every single week and then screams onto the internet for 5 hours afterwards.
Right.
That's good. That's good, great. President.
They're actually rattled by that fucking show. Did you see that interview with Sean Spicer from this grinning Fox News imbecile asking him about it? And
oh, he said they're too mean now.
Yeah, he said SNL's too mean, and but he said like, oh yeah, it was funny. That was so amusing. Like this fucking stupid show.
I do want to know how you can have a brain where you walked around furious for 8 years that Obama one time said that there were 57 states, or that he took right. his suit jacket off in the White House, Oval Office, and then be applauding like a guy who's like rubbing KFC grease on an original copy of the Constitution.
Yeah, and his closest advisors are a guy that ran a blog and his real estate developer son-in-law, who's what, 36 years old, no government experience, no foreign policy experience.
Yeah, it's good.
Trump is
How would that play in an Obama administration if he? If he brought on, let's see, who would he bring on? Ezra Klein?
Well, no, like the thing about him, about how Bannon is going to be on the National Security Council.
Yo, dude, Bannon is a shoo-in for the National Security Council. Bannon uncovered cultural Marxist themes in shows like Dora the Explorer. He found out the real threat to America. He's going to be at home there. Him and fucking Mike Flynn, who endorsed guerrilla mindset.
The equivalent, I think, would be if, you know, Barack Obama, his first 2 weeks in office, he's, ladies and gentlemen, let me be clear, my close personal friend and advisor, the Honorable Reverend Louis Farrakhan, will now be the Joint Chiefs of Staff.
And Keith Olbermann now will be sitting on my, is my lead advisor on anything I do will go through Keith Olbermann.
I mean, it's funny though, but like I think it underscores the idea that like politically and even just personally speaking right now, like hypocrisy no longer matters at all, or just like identifying some hypocrisy in public statements of politicians or other public figures is just a mug's game at this point. Like it really doesn't matter.
Can I ask a question? Because you guys you referenced the New York Times article from the other day that was talking about him walking around in his bathrobe and all that stuff.
Yeah.
6 o'clock, 6:30.
Like fucking so, citizens.
President of the United States, 6:30. Well, quitting time.
Like I'm just a guy who likes to talk about this kind of stuff. I'm not deep in government or in journalism or anything. But I look at the writers of that article and the publication, and I've been taught that that's good reporting, or that's I should take that as generally well reported and well sourced. I mean, those are good reporters, right?
Oh yeah.
And their sources have to be good sources for them to print that kind of stuff.
Yeah, no, they're clearly talking to people in the White House.
And what's that about? Are there just people that used to work there that are observing all this stuff? What's going on?
I mean, there are two things. There are two things. I mean,
there's more than two things.
No, it's only two things. It's never more than two things ever explain any event ever.
That's the rule of two.
Yeah. And
what are they?
So you have a lot of people there who used to work in the Obama White House that were sort of auxiliaries, and maybe they kept a few on because they literally didn't think they had to hire anyone. And the other thing is,
they know how to use the fax machine.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
They can turn the lights on during cabinet meetings.
But the other thing is that all of these people hate the shit out of each other, and they're all backbiting weirdos, and all their previous experience before running the country was like organizing conferences that were like Islam, the hidden threat in preschools.
Right.
Of course, they fucking hate each other and they're trying to hurt all each other with leaks.
This is what I was realized the other night. Is these people don't know each other that well, right?
No.
Like,
no, none of them. It's not like this is a core group who've been like with Trump the way that like Obama had people. These are just right. a bunch of these are basically the ones who like learned how to kiss his ass in specifically the right way to stay in his good graces over the course of just like the year of his campaign.
Right. Yeah, they're all getting to know each other. And they're probably finding they don't like each other.
Tim, are you saying they should do like a team building exercise, like a retreat type thing, like we did when me and Amber joined the show? You know,
get down to Mar-a-Lago.
Yeah, trust
and
exercises.
Work it out.
And like when we had to build a tent blindfolded, that took fucking 3 hours.
Folks, I got a great gift for all of us. Okay, we're taking classes at UCB. You're going to learn improv as a team, okay?
Okay, by the way, I've been calling Mar-a-Lago, you know, just sort of when I've in my free time, and I keep telling people that my name is Jonathan. I'm from McDonald's, and I have an order for Mr. Trump that I need to drop off. We have 25 Big Macs. I'm going to start becoming this guy named Jonathan who works for McDonald's. That's like. Clearly been given large orders to deliver wherever Mr. Trump is.
You know, okay. You know what's fucking amazing, though, is that, like, Tim and Will, you guys bring up a good point that these are all people who ingratiated themselves to Trump by kissing his ass over the course of a year. Trump is so easily influenced. Like, the other day, he talked to King Salman of Saudi Arabia on the phone, and King Salman is 80 years old and has advanced dementia. I would be fucking shocked if King Salman could tie his shoes.
Oh, shit.
But Trump, like, after talking to Salman on the phone, because Salman talked about a two-state solution in Israel-Palestine, Trump, who's never talked about this for, like, 10 years, is like, yeah, that's actually a good idea, and Israel should stop building settlements. He talks to this man who literally has the fucking mind of a child from dementia, who isn't actually running Saudi Arabia, his son is. But he just hears this doddering old man, and because the guy has like a bunch of airplanes and Trump respects him, and because he has such a child's brain himself and is influenced by anyone, he's like, yeah, actually, I was reading, I love Edward Said. fucking love that book. Palestine, Free Palestine.
Well, I mean, just by the name King Salman alone, that must have carried a lot of weight for Trump. You know, I've actually been talking to King Salman about this. It's kind of a big deal.
He said that we should just cut Israel and Palestine in half down the middle.
Right. I have a meeting with Midas later in the week that I'm excited about.
Folks, national debt, don't worry about it. Midas is coming over.
This Jew wandered into the White House and he's got some good ideas.
But yeah, just like going back to this idea of like trying to do, you know, weird, absurd, satirical comedy in a universe now that has just become that without any mediation whatsoever. The idea of Trump just as a TV figure himself and someone who's still obsessed with television, right? Like in the New York Times article, it talks about how like he just mumbles to himself about Don Lemon or something. He's the fucking president. And then his whole thing with Arnold and The Apprentice, like he still cares about the fucking Apprentice. Like, If he could, if they could, if, like, they were like, Mr. Trump, you can still host The Apprentice. We've talked about this. He would be both the president and the host of The Apprentice. And the ratings would be good, though. The ratings would be better.
Oh, they'd be great. I don't know why SNL just hasn't invited him back on. Like, of course he's going to say yes, and it would just be this weird, stupid spectacle that would be way more entertaining than their normal stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a big fan of the Baldwin impression, but I think it gets him riled up. I mean, I don't know if that's a good thing now that he has the nuclear codes, but...
Well, yeah. I was...
What's the coordinates for 30 Rock?
Well, 30 Rock is close enough to Trump Tower that I think they're in the clear. He's not gonna launch a nuke on anywhere near that tower, the beautiful tower.
Well, I was just reading this weekend about how President Nixon... in the Oval Office on Sundays would call in plays to the Washington Redskins while he was going over bombing targets in Cambodia with Henry Kissinger. He'd have a phone in like on each ear and he would be literally calling the Redskins sideline. And I'm just wondering, Like, what is going to be the Trump version of that? Because he, you know, let's be honest, he probably doesn't really care about sports outside the fact that it brutally segregates people into winners and losers. But the actual game itself, I think, probably bores him.
He's going to be calling Vince McMahon and saying, make John Cena do a suplex.
Yeah.
What was the story I heard about him having a Jean-Claude Van Damme movie on his plane that he would watch?
Yeah.
And just fast forward to the action scenes?
Yeah. He literally doesn't know how to watch films.
Right.
Like, he fast forwards through them until they get interesting. It's just, it's terrifying. It's like he's beyond any parody you could make of how stupid and lazy he is. It's insane. How is this president? It's insane.
I mean, like,
this is insane.
We were talking about this the other day, but, like, you almost, it's not so much that you can't really exaggerate what a fucking bumbling oaf dipshit smooth brain Trump is, but the joke kind of is how much he destroys the illusion of American exceptionalism and the respect for these offices we're supposed to have. Like, the real comedy is that we have all these offices we're implicitly supposed to respect for whatever reason. And now that, you know, Grimace is in there, it's like, well, no, yeah, we told you all this shit was stupid because look who's in there now.
The damage is done.
Yeah. They're never going to get the stink of Hardee's out of
Dude, you could.
It's going to be there forever. They're going to have to burn it down and start over again.
Well, that's his Secretary of Labor is the CEO of Hardee's.
Right? Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Hardee's guy. Yeah, that's why he picked him.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yum Foods.
I mean, this is literally a guy who got mad because he didn't realize that he had put Steve Bannon on the National Security Council in the executive order that he signed because nobody told him what was in it because it literally didn't occur to him to read it.
Well, that's so good.
Well, this is what's fucking terrifying. And you know, I think, Electric Intifada had a piece about this the other day about how, like, one of his top advisors, this guy Stephen Miller, was college chums with our good friend Richard Spencer, and this guy is like the policy mind in the White House. And I just think that, like, they're just going to be—he's just going to be signing things that he has no fucking clue what it says, and he'll just sign it and then find out about it on CNN like 2 weeks later, and then get mad because, like you said, Paul Azan sort of sneered at him or something.
He looks so gleeful signing things; just holds them up like it's a prop, just gesturing to the words.
Well, there is that clip I saw the other day of him in a deposition, and they were asking him to read something. They're asking him to read a lease, and he, like, stalled and demurred and was like, you want me to read this? A lot. It's a lot for me to read. I don't know.
Oh, no.
It's a lot. And he kept like, pushing it off. And eventually he was like, well, I don't have my glasses, so I don't know.
It's a Floyd Mayweather
situation.
And it was
like, what fucking glasses does that guy ever wear? When have you ever seen him wear glasses? Yeah. You don't have glasses, asshole.
He's not illiterate. Like, I think he can write and read. But I think it really comes down to he is too lazy to take the brain power necessary to convert words into meaning in his brain.
Yeah. Well, like, there's a difference between, like, illiteracy and, like, having a very low reading, writing comprehension where, like,
yeah,
I know,
like,
the words, but it takes
it
a lot of work
though
for me to read and put it in my brain. Like, I don't know. I would think he probably has if he was tested, you'd probably find he has a low, like an eighth grade reading level or something.
Yeah,
I don't
that
know.
Seems
I mean,
cool.
I'm
that's
not an
average.
Yeah.
That is average.
I think it's going to be pretty low. I mean, he's the guy who adds like four extra letters to his own signature for no reason.
It's all these like, it looks like an EKG or something.
That's a pretty, you have a relatively short name. That should not be that long. It looks like he's writing like Hammurabi out or something.
Like that. But, Tim, you mentioned a second ago him watching action movies, watching Van Damme and just forwarding to the parts where he does a split or something or just roundhouse kicks someone. I want to ask you, though, about, like, we talked a little bit at the beginning about the Decker character and the sort of the genesis of that, and then it gives you this opportunity to play this sort of this Tea Party guy, and it's fun as a comedy character because you can be as, like, deluded and as much of an asshole as possible. And I'm just wondering, like, how did, like, did you, like, what were the influences on that character? Like, did you, like, dip back into the 80s action canon or at all when you're coming up with Decker?
You know, I think that stuff is so ingrained in our brains. Like, it didn't require a lot of research. It was just, like, obvious choices. I mean, there's like a thing my character does where I think I'm doing like Robert De Niro or Clint Eastwood or something, you know, like that's my version of what that should be. But it comes out looking like a retarded person, you know. there's that. And then once Trump like really started chugging, you know, and all, you know, when he started really being on TV quite a bit, and I started paying more attention to his mannerisms and sort of adopted. Even in this last season we shot, I was doing a lot more of that sniffing, that like at the end of the sentence that he do. So, and that sort of the other thing I added was like that swaying, like when he's standing in place, there's like a little bit of a sway that he does, like rocking from one foot to the next, and kind of this like the shoulders are a little limp and he just looks like he wants to lay down a little bit. I incorporated that. As far as like the action stuff, like that's just all like the me and the guys that make the show, just it's so ingrained in our brain that it's
already there to be drawn on. But I mean, like that is great. But I mean, like what I love so much about the character is, I think it like really perfectly captures. I love the concept of like, what if all of these like sort of Tea Party fantasies about President Obama and like the troops were all true, and I think you captured that in Decker so well. Like the you and President Davison, where he's just like, "Oh, I don't know, Decker, should we surrender?"
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's very fun to play with that. I've always done sketch comedy, what, you know, awesome show, very like short form, move on to the next idea, like high concept stuff. And it's fun to do a show that where the character, you know, the cores of all the characters are very clear, and you can go back to the same kind of, you can use the same relationship over and over again, and it's still fun. It's like a sitcom. I mean, that's like, it's not anything new. It's just something I'm not used to ever doing, and it's fun and frankly kind of easy. This is why there's hundreds of sitcoms, thousands. And the trick for me is to not, like, we actually write scripts, and then I forget them and don't memorize them. So I
really, it's hard to tell.
So if like there's cue cards and there's people telling me the lines off camera and stuff, but we really want to create that feeling of that this guy is not prepared, not good at doing this.
Yeah, and that's, you know, I think we bring a similar mentality to everything we do on this show.
What do the polls say? Decker, that was fast.
I had a little help from the United States Air Force, some of the bravest men and women in America. Unfortunately, I wish you understood how to support the troops.
What's in the briefcase?
That's a plan to destroy America.
Well, let's open it up, read the details, so we can stop this madness.
I can't. It's a 3-digit code preventing me from opening it. If I open it, it's going to blow.
Decker, you're the strongest man that I know. I mean, let's just rip it open.
Don't you think I would have done that by now? Now, this is rigged to blow. Get it? If I try to pry that open, it's going to blow up the White House. Now, I don't mind falling on the sword for my country, and I sure as hell wouldn't mind seeing you go. But there is no way that I'm going to blow up 200 years of American history by blowing up the White House, not to mention the Founding Fathers.
How do we break the code?
I'll need access to your top secret FBI agent or CIA agent who had it for code breaking.
Top secret.
God damn it, you asshole. Do you want to save this country or not?
I'm sorry, Decker, but my hands are tied.
All right. We're going to be doing this the hard way then. Do you want your brain splattered on the desk, or are you going to call that CIA guy? Access, Mr. President. Now.
So Tim, like I said, we love Decker, and another thing we've been doing on the show, sort of a running theme now, is we have the reading series, right, where we read these horrible articles and books by people, and the longest running reading series we've been doing, it's now been over 3 episodes, and I think we'd like to bring it back here with you now. is the ripped from the headlines thriller True Allegiance by Ben Shapiro. Yeah. Are you familiar with
This is by Ben Shapiro. Yes, yeah. I heard one of these already.
Okay,
on your show.
It's terrific. So you're already familiar with Ben Shapiro and True Allegiance?
Yes.
At the very end, there's sort of the climax where there is a confrontation between General Brett Hawthorne and President Prescott that, you know, is basically ripped from Decker, not from the headlines. Yeah. So I'm gonna read to start out, and then hopefully we can, you know, we'll get the hang of it. But just to update listeners, where we laughed last, our heroes, General Brett Hawthorne, a bear of a man with a chin like a slab of granite.
Uncut.
6 feet, uncut. Daddy. He's just been liberated by special forces from, he's being held by Al-Qaeda's Tehran branch. And he's been liberated by the special forces, and he's now free again. And I'm going to begin here where he's talking to his wife, Ellen Hawthorne, who is the chief of staff to Texas Governor Bubba Davis, who's sending the dang troops to secure his border no matter what the president says.
Previously, President Prescott threatened to throw Governor Shedhead in jail for protecting his border.
Yeah. And he's not going to stand for it. But this is now, I'm going to read it here. This is the reunion between Ellen and Brett. The phone rang. Ellen hastily checked her bedside clock. It read 7:56 a.m. She'd overslept. She'd taken a sleeping pill to calm herself down after the president's speech. the determinedly cheery ring continued. She leaned over, picked up. Ellen Hawthorne, she said groggily into the phone. It's me, baby. Involuntarily, tears sprang to her eyes. Oh, God, you're all right. Brett. We don't have time, baby. I'm here. I'm fine. I can't tell you where I am right now for security reasons. We're not in American airspace yet, but I need you to call Bill. She immediately snapped to attention. Brett didn't need the loving wife right now. He needed the partner. She'd put on that hat so many times, it sprang to her without delay.
You could almost say that she put on the beard.
I need you to conference in Bill. He'll know. Why can't I call him? Why can't you call him directly? I can't explain. I'm your only call. They're monitoring it. You got it. She scrolled through her cell phone until she came to the name Bill Collier. She dialed.
That's how I also find people on my phone.
She dialed. On the first ring, General Collier picked up. This is Bill.
Fuck you. This is crackling writing, by the way. Yeah. I'm on the edge of my seat.
This is Bill. Bill, this is Ellen. I've got Brett on the other line. I need to conference you in.
Hell yes.
Do it. She put them on the party line. Okay, she said. We're all together. This is, like I said, I'm glad he had this dialogue to let you know how the conference call turned out.
Brendan, can you actually put this in the show now when we're figuring out Skype and shit? Yeah. Take a cue off, Ben.
That's literature.
Glad to hear you're alive and kicking, kid, said Collier. Thought you'd bitten it that time. Bill, I need you to get your boys on something. I need them to find a known associate of a Shami. His name's Muhammad. By the way, they're doing a conference call because the call is being monitored. And I guess the implication here is once you go on conference call, they're like, we've lost it.
President Prescott is listening on the other end, and he's like, I was going to listen to them talk to Bill, but I have to go eat dog.
So he goes, right, I'm on it. I'm looking for a guy named Muhammad. Done. He says, he's coming.
That's easy. That's not a common name at all.
Well, General Bill Collier says, that's like finding a guy named Juan in Mexico. But so they get off the conference call, and this is the tearful reunion between Ellen and Brett. She says, are you okay, honey? Ellen asked after she knew Collier had clicked off the line. She could hear him sigh audibly. I don't know, sweetheart.
Well, I hope so.
I don't know what I'm doing
here. She wouldn't have been able to hear him sigh if it hadn't been audible.
I don't know, sweetheart. I don't know what I'm doing here, why I'm doing it, what they did to my guys in Afghanistan. I know, sweetheart. I know. Ellen, I wasn't supposed to live. That wasn't the message I gave. I blinked airstrike, not tactical mission, not rescue, airstrike.
He's like, General Brett Hawthorne is like Nick Mullen. He learned Morse code just because he thought it would be funny to learn it.
Yeah, Tim, the backstory there is that General Brett Hawthorne was about to be executed in a terrorist ISIS video, but he blinked, right. He blinked the GPS coordinates in Morse code of where he was, yeah. And then airstrike right. with it. And then,
wait a minute. So he's mad at the pussy president for not killing him?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, yes. Yeah.
Okay.
He let a Ashami get away, goddammit.
I'm sorry, are you saying a shaman?
Ashami is the name of the Iranian Taliban Al-Qaeda agent.
Yeah. Oh,
okay.
Just one last detail from this chapter. You'll remember in the prologue to this book features a mother and child being crushed to death when the George Washington Bridge is blown up by terrorists. Now the narrative has caught up to that atrocity, and it's already happened. And this is a great line from Ben here. She says, she glanced at the television. The rescue crew was pulling another body from the water. A young girl wearing a Disneyland sweatshirt. Ben has this knack for...
That's a callback. That's good writing.
Yeah.
Ben has a knack for including details about the clothes people are wearing that are just...
Like that Homer Simpson shirt.
Yeah,
that,
yeah.
Black Youth was wearing when he got shot.
Mm-hmm.
As Officer Starin Bilson accidentally put the kid in a wheat thresher, his Apu was turned into bits of confetti thrown out of the exhaust.
But I just like that additional detail about the little girl's body, and she had a Disneyland sweatshirt on. It's just that added touch of innocence being just violently rendered from this world.
I do not know what a Disneyland sweatshirt looks like. It's just like saying, oh, the child was wearing a children's shirt.
The child was wearing jeans with embroidered on the back, I hope I never get killed by Islam. I'm 8 years old.
I was just going to add that, you know, this is bad, but it's not Homeland bad.
Yeah. Tim is right. In Homeland, the terrorist literally would be named like Quran Jihad Muhammad. And
conveniently living next door to Carrie or whatever.
That's
the one thing I was watching when we were doing last season, the last season of Homeland. We're doing Decker. I was like, this isn't that different.
It's not like, fucking different at all. It's not different.
There's
at
fucking
all.
Like eight people in the world that were the everything that happens in the world kind of flows through these eight people, and they're always like in the room together and stuff. And that was inspiring to me.
Carrie, the biggest terrorist in the world is renting your downstairs basement as an apartment, and due to international law rules, you can't arrest a tenant.
You should have maybe Decker could have a bipolar episode, failed suicide attempt, and then we'll just get right back on it while sleeping with the head of Al-Qaeda.
Yep.
So now we're checking back in on Brett Hawthorne. This is after the George Washington Bridge has been blown up by terrorists. He says, Brett surveyed the damage from the top of a nearby parking lot. It stretched before him like a diorama, unreal in miniature, too dramatic for life.
That's, God damn it, Ben. It's so fucking bad.
And then wouldn't you know it, Bill Collier, his wife Jennifer, and their daughter had been on the bridge. And Ben writes, they still hadn't dredged up her body.
Oh, my God.
Bill had been married to Jennifer for a long time. He'd also lost his daughter and her Disney World sweatshirt. No, I just added that. It said he'd also lost his daughter in the attack, an 8-year-old he'd called his little trooper.
Wow, you really... Ben can really paint the picture of the tragedy. I feel
an
like it's my loss.
And he could tell that his friend Bill was craggy, and he'd aged a year and a day and no longer looked like a bear of a man. he looked like a mouse of a man.
Bill was circumcised by the tragedy.
he looked more like an otter of a man now.
Yeah.
Down from bear.
So Bill Collier says, then he told Brett he'd be like the president would be personally ordering him to New York City. The president won't like that, Brett said. Tough. My patience for bullshit goes out the window after I watch them search on television for my daughter's body, said the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. I'll make whatever excuse I have to make. I want to know who's responsible for this, and right now you're my best lead. You're the only person who's seen this Muhammad. You've seen a picture of this Muhammad.
You are the only person who has gone to the Charlie Hebdo offices and seen the picture of Muhammad sucking a dick labeled Les Politiques.
Could you, if you remember what he looked like, could you possibly draw a picture of Muhammad?
So, like, General Bill Collier, chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, whose wife and little trooper has just been blown up on the George Washington Bridge, has now ordered Brett to sort of, like, go off reservation and use racial profiling to investigate the terrorist attack. So he says, Bill is now at JFK. Get over to JFK. They'll be waiting for you. The airport felt like a mausoleum, completely empty, completely deserted, utterly quiet.
Great writing.
Great writing again. It's my job to be repetitive. Being repetitive is my job. listen to this analogy here. Simile. The planes sat at their terminals like sleeping grasshoppers.
Sleeping grasshoppers loved, like, staying at terminals.
So he goes to the Port Authority security team, and he's like, show me all the Muhammads you've got. And he said, after realizing there were too many combinations of flight to check every itinerary and every manifest, Brett finally dispensed with the politically correct pleasantries. Jim, he'd said to one of the officials, I want to access the customs files. If you don't mind me asking, sir, muttered the official, is there somebody we're looking for particularly? Brett said, yes, an Arabic-looking young man.
Arabic? Arabic is the language.
An Arabic-looking young man.
Yeah.
The official hemmed and hawed. I'm uncomfortable with that, sir.
I need a safe space.
Oh, boy. Profiling.
That's racial profiling, sir. You're not doing the profiling. I am. Well, now I'm a party to it. Brett stared into his face. I don't care. Just do it. Sir, it's against regulations, though. Look, Brett burst out, losing his patience. I don't give a rat's ass at this point about whether it's racial profiling or not. Maybe you're right. Maybe Muhammad is a light-skinned Norwegian woman or a Cherokee elder. Or maybe he's a Persian or Arabic-looking son of a bitch who hangs out with other Persian and Arabic-looking sons of bitches who look like Ibrahim Ashami. If I end up being wrong and he looks like Helen Mirren, feel free to call the New York Times editorial board.
Oh, hell yeah.
Jeez.
Brett Hawthorne really taking care of business there, Tim.
I like how when they said Brett Hawthorne was going to dispense the politically correct niceties, I thought that meant that he was going to put on blackface. He was conducting the search.
He puts on olive face and goes, it looks like this, pointing at himself. Tim, like, now having, written, I'm putting that in quotation marks, whole seasons of Decker and then performed them. What is it like to hear Ben Shapiro writing this book completely sincerely?
Oh, it's a little sad, I guess. I mean, he's probably excited about it, but it's hard. I mean, it's hard to write stuff that's good, that's great, you know, and he's not, doesn't seem to be very good at it, but it takes a long time to even do this. So it must feel, I don't know. I don't know what his friends, what do you think his friends
tell
him?
I could do it in a week.
You think it's, I think there's stuff that I do that my friends probably don't think is that great, and it never really comes up, you know?
I was looking at some of the Goodreads reviews of this book from fans of Ben Shapiro, and one did say something along the lines of, Ben Shapiro's an idol of mine. I love everything he does, but he just wasn't meant to write fiction. the next chapter, President Prescott has to address the nation, you know, in the crumbled ruins of the George Washington Bridge. And he's very concerned. He's put all his best speechwriters on it. He has his crispest, clearest, best teleprompter that he's reading off of. And in the middle of his speech, a voice cried out from the back of the crowd, "You did this!" Prescott was momentarily startled. Then he began again. The voice again. "You did this, Mr. President!" A murmur carried through the crowd. The voice continued. And suddenly, a few of the cameras swung around from facing the president to the lone protester. It was a woman, overweight, wearing faded jeans and a t-shirt with holes in it, her hair chopped short. "You did this, Mr. President. My husband is at the bottom of the river because of you, Mr. President." I like that he describes that she's overweight and wearing a shirt with holes in it.
Well, she's an authentic working class person. That's what he thinks they all look like. Like, because, you know, he was born wearing pleated slacks, so he doesn't actually know what, like, regular people look like, so he just assumes that they're all walking around just looking disheveled
in clothing that they like picked out of a dumpster.
Everyone in the crowd is wearing JNCOs, except for President Prescott.
So Prescott, being the smooth talker that he is, manages to turn the situation around and pull it out of the bag by being very inspirational and eloquent about how love is the answer.
Classic Prescott, baby.
Classic Prescott. So, like, yeah, speaking to the point of the weird racial agenda in this book, there's another chapter where there's another character who's sort of a Sarah Palin-esque militia member and rancher. And then the plots converge because her and her motorcycle gang go to Detroit, Michigan, where there is, in Ben's words, a lynch mob outside the holding cell where the officer Ricky O'Sullivan is being held, the one who shot a 10-year-old boy for dissing him. And they show up to the rally wearing T-shirts that say "Fight the Thugs."
Wow!
It goes on like that, and this takes us to the beginning of part three. And now, Tim, I sent you two screen caps of this, and I was hoping that you could read the scene where General Brett Hawthorne confronts Mark Prescott in his hotel room.
I'm reading Brett.
I'll be President Prescott. Okay.
Okay, cool.
You have got to be kidding me with this. I'm trying to hold the country together, and you're out there fucking supporting the enemy by targeting Muslims? How am I supposed to counter the accusations? Brett sat on the couch watching the president rage at him. On his way to the hotel, the Secret Service agents had been utterly silent. They refused to answer any of his questions, give him any information at all, but Brett had figured that they must have picked up Hassan as well. How else could they have found it? Prescott continued to yell. I elevated you. I made you. I saved you. And this is how you reward me?
Oh, you didn't build that.
Brett could feel the anger building. He flexed his fist, then let it go. An old trick Ellen had taught him to take his mind off his temper. It wasn't working.
What?
It wasn't working. Tell me. I expect an answer. What were you thinking? I gave you your life back.
No. I signaled you. I told you to hit the building.
Prescott scoffed, disbelieving. You can't be serious. You wanted me to start a war with Iran after Iraq and Afghanistan? We just finished blowing the troops out, for God's sakes. We got you out, didn't we?
That was the goddamn point. The point was that I had intelligence that said Ashami was there, my life for his. That was my trade to make. I just needed you to do your damn part, and you chickened out, as usual.
I could toss you out of the military for this, General. Prescott's eyes were steely blue dots in a puffy red field. You've gone too far this time.
Go ahead. I'd love to tell the press just what you did, because you couldn't keep this country safe. You weren't willing to make the tough choices, Mr. President.
Prescott went quiet for a moment. Then oddly, he smiled. Well, I'll make this tough choice, General, at least for you. You can either walk out of here and stop this nonsense, or you can keep going. If you keep going, I'll instruct my Attorney General to draw up federal charges against you for violation of Imam Omari's civil rights. And this time, there won't be any sending you to Afghanistan.
Mr. President, I would think not. You lost that country, so there wouldn't be much to send me to, would there? I just want you to think about this, Mr. President. All those people out there would be alive today if you just followed my advice. I'll tell that to every camera I can find.
Holy shit. Prescott reached down to the coffee table and picked up the remote control. He flipped the channel to CNN, where the anchors continued to gush over Prescott's big speech. General, I can afford a few public relations hits right now. Rally round the flag effect and all that. You'll be seen as an ungrateful rube looking to hit back the man who saved you. Your time is over, General. Now get out of my sight.
I understand our enemies better now, Mr. President. You're not a very credible bluffer. Wow. You're right. I'm taking this wholesale. I'll take it all.
He turned his back and slammed the door behind him. Oh my God.
I think the next season we do, we're bringing on Shapiro as a
head writer.
He's
writer.
So good.
Yeah, head writer.
We have these like fake credits in Decker, and this one we're cutting right now. We've added this one episode inspired by a speech by John Voight.
Tim, I really want to thank you for joining us and for doing your part to play General Brett Hawthorne in a way that I think it was the role that I think like the character deserved. And it was the perfect channeling of that.
Tim, you made him jump off the page.
Thank you.
Yeah, I didn't really buy him. Like, I thought Ben had created sort of a cardboard caricature, but then you brought him life.
Well, thank you, gentlemen. It was a pleasure to perform that with you, and it was a pleasure to speak with you about the issues of the day.
Thanks a lot, Tim.
Yeah, thank
again,
you,
thanks so much for coming on. It was really fun to talk to you.
You bet.
Thanks,
cheers.
Tim.
All right.
Thanks.
Hope we can do it again soon. Take care.
Awesome. Yeah. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, I'm looking at the world now, and it's going insane. Thinking about checking out, can't do it again. But I know just who I am, how strong I can be. And I know I'm the only one who can help us be free, yeah. Na 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 na. This country's yours and mine. It's the home of the brave and free. It's the place for you and me. Oh, na 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 na. It's only a matter of time till we get things back on track. Our values are under attack now, and the bad guys get the benefits. Rest of us pay their way. Patriots are under attack just for having their say. While I'm riding down Freedom Road, agents on my tail. You wave a flag on Christmas Day, they'll throw you in jail. Hey! Oh, na 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 na. This country's yours and mine. It's the home of the brave and free. It's the place for you and me. Oh, na 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 na. It's only a matter of time till we get things back on track. Our values are under attack. Don't matter if you're black or white, there's a difference between wrong and right. It's written down for all to read. That's the U.S. Constitution, it's all you need. Oh, na 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 na. This country's yours and the home of the brave and free. It's a place for you and me. Oh, na 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 na. It's only a matter of time till we get things back on track. Our values are under attack. Hey!
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down.
Love your new song, Decker.